His computer machine. There he goes. Now we're in business.
Hello, Christopher?
Hello.
Hi. How's it going, gentlemen?
You didn't miss
How del
much.
how delightful to hear your voice.
We were just talking about movie theaters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Chris have a date next Friday, right, Chris?
Yeah, I'm rushing out. Find out whatever film is going to be the busiest and go to that one.
That's right.
Tenant probably still, I would think.
Yeah.
Did that come out?
It
Because
did a while ago.
it's actually not doing bad considering it's a pandemic. It worldwide, it's made its money back, and it's making profit now. So I mean, it's probably not like where it wanted to be, like in
Oh, no.
$1 billion, but
Oh.
it's better than nothing for a studio that can't release anything.
Might be okay for the studio, but I can't. I mean, that's why like Regal closed down for the rest of the year. They just their costs are higher than the amount of money that they're bringing in.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to happen to other ones because our theater's like showing only like five new releases, and then the rest are like Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and stuff like
Bunch of theaters
that.
here announced that they're going to show Hocus Pocus next week.
Oh, there you go. I didn't see that.
Stacy just showed it to the kids 2 weeks ago, so I watched it for the very first time.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
It was very entertaining, actually.
Yeah, I only went to the theater a few times a year prior to the pandemic, so I don't know when the next time I'll go to the movies, maybe 2022 at the earliest.
I know.
Yeah,
Well, that's what
probably
I
affects
don't
you
know.
the least. Probably affects me the most.
And I'm Goldilocks.
Oh yeah, you're just right in the middle. You're just right.
Yeah, that was funny. I saw your tweet a couple of days ago, Mike, and I was laughing because the theater near us had advertised, that they were selling popcorn, and Kara and I were out somewhere, went past, and I was like, I understand why they're doing that because they're trying to make money, but does anybody actually go to the theater and buy popcorn?
Yeah.
And I saw your tweet Friday, and I started laughing, but
That's right.
you guys went pretty much almost every
Every
Saturday, though, so.
every Saturday, and we love the popcorn, so it makes everything better. So we still have some popcorn left over, but yeah, we watched the plane, Fantasy
Welcome
Island.
to Plenty Island.
And that was the original.
No, we watched the Blumhouse Fantasy Island.
I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was way better than I thought. Like I liked it. The hook was a little bit far-fetched because but it was pretty entertaining.
It was just, you can't like really think too much about all like the plot twists and stuff, but it was fun to, it was definitely a fun movie.
Oh, it's a horror movie. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know what
Yeah.
you guys were talking. Oh, that 8% on Rotten Tomatoes. That sounds good.
Did you say
Yeah.
80%?
Eight.
Eight. Gotcha.
Eight. Two less than 10.
Well, me and Rob are in the eight. We
Yeah.
liked it.
I guess it
I don't
depends
know
on
what
what
people
you're.
go in to expect when they go into a horror movie. I mean, Jesus.
Citizen Kane, I guess.
Who rates a movie 4 out of 10?
I do. Wise
Oh,
guy.
we no, we
That
saw
was.
one. We saw one we didn't like. Well, remember we didn't like The Witch?
Yes.
Well, we saw another witch movie. It was a Rob Zombie movie called Lords of Salem.
Oh, you didn't like that. I haven't seen that one
I
yet.
li I liked it. I liked it, but I thought the first half of the movie was so much better than the second half. Like, second half was kind of a disappointment, but I liked it. But Barb said she liked The Witch better, which is
Oh
like
my God, that's bad.
that wasn't good.
Yeah, I do want to see. I started watching Lords of Salem a while ago. Like, it was late at night, and I just was getting too sleepy, and so I turned it off, and then I just never ended up going back to it. I
It's an
want to start from the
interesting
beginning and watch them all.
it's an interesting premise. Like, I just don't think he landed it. Like, it ends ambiguous. Like, that, I think that's where the problem of the movie is. 'Cause it's interesting 'cause the characters are interesting 'cause they're like late night rock radio, DJs. That's kind of cool. And I always like Sherry Moon, so
Oh,
I
yeah.
usually like Rob Zombie movies too. Like I'm a fan of the trilogy that he did, and
The House of a Thousand Corpses.
yeah, Sid Haig was supposed to be in this one, but I didn't see him. Like he's in the credits, but man, he must have had like a role that was like 2 minutes, and I just didn't notice him.
Could be. Yeah, I would imagine he was really sick by then, too.
Well, Lords of Salem came out before the third in the trilogy. That's when he was really sick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it was 2012.
I met
Haven't seen that one.
I met Sid Haig at San Diego Comic-Con. So that was kind of cool.
Only seen I only saw the first. I saw Thousand Corpses and Devil's
Yeah.
Rejects. I've seen those too, which they're good. I mean, they're
They're like retro horror, like shock horror, the way I would consider them.
Yeah, I would say they're like, I mean, they're like above average. They're not great movies, but they were entertaining.
Yeah.
I like it because the characters, like Captain Spaulding's awesome. And then they're all brothers and sisters and they're all crazy as hell. But it's kind of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but the characters have a little more personality than the whacked out family. Like they have more depth than Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
The Thousand Corpses definitely is
Yeah.
like definitely has a Texas Chainsaw influence on there. Devil's Rejects was kind of different because it was like more of a
Serious movie, kind
like
of.
a and like a road trip movie.
Yeah. It was they were still psychos, but they were on the run.
Yeah, it had some different influences.
Yeah, I think I want to. I just recently saw House of a Thousand Corpses again, and I want to kind of pick up from there and watch all of them.
I think they're on Amazon Prime, at least they were at one
Yeah.
time.
Yeah,
Oh,
I can't remember.
I saw Midsommar.
You did! What did you
Yeah,
think? Good or bad?
I thought it was very original. I thought it was very, very interesting for sure.
Oh, I'm glad. I mean, but would you say that you liked it, or
No,
was
I
it too?
liked it. I liked it,
Okay, good.
yeah.
I really liked it, and
I like horror movies that, like, I don't know what to expect, and I can't like figure out.
yeah.
That's why that one Vivarium and this one, they're two movies that I was like, what? Like they're just like they don't fall into your typical horror movie. This one was scary because it was more like a cult.
Yeah. It was I mean
It
it was
may.
unsettling like the whole be like, 'cause it's a very long movie and a lot of it's just like slowly unfolding and it's unsettling. But
Yeah.
then as it picks up you're like, "Oh my God, this is nuts."
I liked it more for how it was written than I did the acting. Like I thought the main boyfriend was lame. Like I never got to like any of the characters.
Yeah.
The only one I liked was the Mark guy. Mark was the guy that peed on the tree. But I liked him because he was in that family drug movie that Barb likes so much. I forget what it was, where the spider bites him in the balls. But I've always liked that actor, so I kind of like he was not even a big part in the movie.
You didn't like the main girl?
I thought I liked her when she was just acting, but I didn't like her. I thought her crying, like she did a lot of crying.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like just so.
See, at the very beginning of the movie, I thought she did a really good job with like that type of like you can't, but like that grief, like that, like you can't even control yourself at the beginning. Like yeah. She's just like breaking down in grief and stuff like that. I thought she did a good job with that.
Well, that's a messed up way to like, you know, you get a text
yeah.
from your bipolar sister. And I don't know, man, that would stress the shit out of me. That's for sure. But yeah, it was good. I was glad. It was a long movie. It was like 2 hours and 30 minutes. And it was that good because I usually pass out around 10. And I stayed up till 11:30 to finish it, so it kept my interest for sure. Because I usually pass out about 10 o'clock at night. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, that's cool.
I was either gonna watch that or Bloom. There was 4 new Blumhouses on Amazon Prime that showed up.
Yeah, I gotta watch. I haven't watched any of them. I've gotta do that.
The one sounds real interesting. It's about a mother that is watching her daughter date this guy, and he's like the reincarnation of a boyfriend that tried to kill her. So I don't know. It just sounds weird. I read the descriptions of all of them. A couple of those probably would have went to theaters, but they probably didn't because of
COVID. Oh, I'm sure. You're right. This time of year, they would have just put them up.
They're saying, Prime, do you want to buy them for this? And,
yep.
You know, nobody's going to the theater anyway. It's probably a good deal for them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wish I would have picked one of those instead of The Beyond that I watched yesterday. That committed the worst sin of any horror movie. It was boring. A horror movie could be really bad and still be enjoyable. This one was just boring.
What was this one about?
Called The Beyond, and this woman.
What year?
1981. This woman inherits an old hotel that's been abandoned in Louisiana, and it's apparently on the site of one of the 7 gates to hell. And it's just like random people left and right just die, and because of in understandably because of the budgets and stuff. Either the thing attacking is obviously fake, and so the person being attacked really can't move around, or the person being attacked is like a prosthetic and obviously then can't move. So no matter who's being attacked, like how you're being attacked, you're just standing. The person is just standing still and letting it happen to them because they don't have the budget to like produce anything realistic enough to show like somebody trying to escape or get away, whatever. But it had no rhyme or reason who was dying and why and stuff. And it just after a while, I just started getting bored and I started like just looking at my phone and stuff while I was watching it because
Was it in your top?
It is. One? It's in my book.
Yeah.
And if you look at IMDb, it's like a 6.8 average, which is very good score for.
It was better than Fantasy Island.
That's better what I'm saying. I expect it to be pretty good.
See, I don't trust your reviews always make me curious because I don't trust your reviews. Like
I know you don't.
Just like you don't trust mine. But it's I don't know. I have more patience than you. So it has to be like Antichrist or something where...
Well, this, I thought, like, was boring. You go ahead and watch it and tell me what you
think. It has to be like Antichrist boring to
take
me out.
No, I'm sure it wasn't that bad.
It has to be like Bill Bomer pretentious.
It definitely was not pretentious.
So, yeah, I don't know. Because time-wise in special effects, I can shift. I don't worry about that.
No, I usually don't mind bad special... It was... Like, I don't know how to describe it.
Rob watches a lot of old movies.
Huh?
Yeah.
I said you watch a lot of older movies, so that's probably not a problem for you.
Yeah, I love older movies, but it was just boring. It was just not interesting, at least to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I know that director is pretty...
Bulchy?
Yeah, highly You know, he's got a good reputation. If you like that, yeah, like Italian horror.
But. Yeah. I don't know. Just didn't hit me. And honestly, this is also, I think it was the fifth time that I've tried to watch the whole thing. I have started it at least three or four times before and like ended up just turning it off after like a half an hour. So I'm like, well, today I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch the whole thing. And then I can cover it tomorrow in retro. And I'm like, this is so, it's just
boring. So boring.
I don't want to get into like any detail with it.
You don't, that's not one of your topics then.
No.
It ranked your way out.
It did. So I'm like, all right, I'll grab an extra comic to talk about instead because I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That's usually pretty dedicated, though, to try five times.
Well, I think it's one of his goals, though, movies. Is to get through all those movies that are in the book.
Yeah. Still.
If it wasn't in the book, then he probably would have bailed.
Probably, but the fact that it was in there and it has a pretty high rating for a horror movie, I'm like, maybe I was just too tired the other times, like, or maybe it starts getting a lot better.
I have to be in the mood for something, like even for a good film. Like, if I'm not in the mood to watch The Thing, which I absolutely love, I don't want to watch it. Like,
yeah,
I have to. Like last night, I felt in the mood for a horror, but I didn't know what, and I knew it couldn't be like Lords of Salem, because then Barb would have killed me. But Midsommar, I have heard. I didn't just hear you. I've heard other people say it was good. And it makes you want to research it a little bit because it makes you want to research like the origins of the film and whether if it had like some element of truth in Sweden.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea or the weirdness of the age thing. Like,
well, tell Chris a little what it's about. It's not a retro thing, but just so he knows.
Yeah, it's sort of like a realistic Logan's Run, but they don't ever get to run. In Logan's Run, you turn the age of 30, and your energy is like sucked up into the jewel, and you die. But in this one, there's like a cult in Sweden. When you turn the age of 72,
like this little village, this isolated village.
When you turn the age of 72, you sacrifice yourself. But these college guys, there's four guys and one girl, and one girl has this incident in her life, which I don't want to say what it is because it sort of gives away. It's kind of like a shocking. What do you call it? Opening in the movie.
Very shocking.
But it sort of traumatizes her, and she goes along with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend doesn't even want her there. It would have been probably better if she didn't go, but maybe things turned out for the better for her. Because if you look at the end, the way it ends, I don't know. Maybe she's happier with this.
I don't know, but it would.
That was the first time that she smiled in the whole movie, really,
yeah,
as
true.
The end. But it's essentially like a cult, and this one of the college students brings those people into this cult, and things don't turn out well. But it's like it has to do with like the solstice or what is it like the. The Midsommar in Sweden.
And it's like once every, like, I don't remember, 100 years
Yeah, 100 years. And it's just, it is weird. But it's very original, I think. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. But I think their reactions were, like, so stupid. Like, when the first guy went missing... There's no way in hell that guy would have. There's no way he would have left that girl. Like he loved that girl. Like if anybody was a couple, it was those two. They were all over each other, holding hands, the whole thing. Totally in love. And then he goes vanishing, and then all he just left. He took the truck and just left you. And I'm like, that ain't right. At that moment, they should have just all left. But that two of the guys, well, one of the guys was there to do a thesis. Like, he wanted to do his paper, his college paper, on this Midsommar event. And they were supposed to travel from Sweden to Germany to somewhere else, and then he'd finish his paper, but I guess it didn't work out. You have anything else to add to it, Rob, that I missed?
No, that's pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, it's like this huge.
There's an insane
ceremony once every 100 years, and
well, that the sexual thing about it too, it was very weird.
Yeah.
Like, I found that was like. And I think the actor did really good there, because they drugged him, and he was supposed to breed with a girl that probably just turned 16.
Yeah.
And have a baby. And that whole scene was weird, because all the women, they just sort of disrobed, and they started singing and chanting, and he was sort of drugged, so he couldn't. He was in, like, this state of euphoria. I even think they gave him a stimulant, like something to keep him erect. But the way I thought he did a good job, because the way he was looking through his eyes, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like he part of him was still conscious, but he wasn't. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it was his eyes. Like, he was looking and like, what the hell am I doing? What is happening here? It was weird. It was good, though. I'd recommend. It's well done. I don't know. Is it a foreign film? What is it? I don't know.
You know what? I don't know. I didn't even think to.
It went to theaters. I know that.
It definitely was in theaters, yeah.
Because I remember when it was on there, and I was asking Barb, what the hell is this? And we didn't know what it was. Like, I would have never guessed a movie called Midsommar was a horror movie.
I saw that it was a horror one, but I think by the time that, because Stacy's not going to go to that, so that's one I'm going to have to go to on my own. By the time I got around that I was going to go, I was going to leave work early actually to see it one time, I looked up the theater and it was no longer showing. So I'm like, oh, I guess I'm waiting for that to come out on VOD.
I used to be more of a horror fan, though, because I used to actually go buy all the DVDs. Do you remember they used to have the 8 Films to Die For series?
Yeah.
They did that like 6 years in a row, and I would go buy every single one of them and then watch every single one just to see. They were all like Blumhouse type films, but lower budget, maybe a little lower tier. But yeah, I used to watch a lot more horror in Halloween time for sure than I do now.
Yeah, I'm trying to watch stuff on the weekends, but like during the week, I can't stay up long enough to watch a home movie.
Yeah, right now it's the. Well, see, we're watching Nosferatu, which is kind of a horror movie.
Yeah.
And then the Three Musketeers, which I'm on the third season now. So, yeah, I get focused on certain things. And the only thing else we're watching is Star Trek, the Discovery.
The Discovery? Yeah, Stacey just started watching that.
Did you watch the premiere?
I watched the first and second episodes.
It's good, huh?
I
thought it was very engaging.
Yeah, very much so. And like at the end of the second episode, like, okay, well, what's going to happen now?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, we're interested to, because I think there's 4 of them out so far, so got 2 more on the
DVR. Yeah, we saw the other 2, so we're caught up on that.
Yeah.
But, I really like the cast for that, even though it seems like I wouldn't have thought what happened in the first episode sort of changed the cast, but
yeah,
because she was
good.
The one captain was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in a James Bond movie too.
Yeah. She's really good. So yeah, it was good stuff. The other one's from Walking Dead, you know, the
yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell Stacy because she recognized her. I said, she's from Walking Dead, but I can't remember what her name is in The Walking Dead. Do you?
I can't either. I remember her part.
Yeah, me too. I just can't remember her name.
Yeah, it's hard. Walking Dead just kind of... I'm sort of caught up except with this season, but they introduce so many characters, and then some of the characters even crossing shows.
Yeah.
Isn't it over with or ending soon or something like that? Or
got two more seasons.
They spawned off another two shows, though.
They did. They've got two other shows. The main one's going two more seasons, and then after that... Chris, have you watched any of it? Do you know who Daryl and Carol are?
Yeah, well, I've read some of the comics too.
Well, Daryl's not in the comic.
Right, yeah. No,
okay.
I watched.
So those two are going to have their own spinoff show after the main show ends. So it's never ending.
I kind of wish they wouldn't announce that so early, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it kind of takes away the tension, don't you think? At least for those
100%.
Characters, because you're like, well, they're not going to be in jeopardy.
Especially as you start to get to a series finale, and you kind of feel like, well, anything can happen in the series finale. It's going to wrap up. But no, you know that these two characters are going to be fine. I wish they wouldn't have mentioned it at all and just like sprung it on us as a surprise afterwards.
Yeah, I wonder why they even would do that. I can't really immediately think of the advantages of... I'm looking at, like, the series, because I'm trying to figure out when I stopped watching that.
Probably back when you were, like, 12, because that's been on for about 35 years.
Seems like it. No, I mean, I watched a fair amount... But yeah, don't wait for me. I'll figure it out eventually, but don't wait for me to.
Well, it's been going for a long time.
Well, do you guys want to jump into our picks?
Well, why not, huh?
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I'll do one.
Okay.
That's okay. You know, I was thinking... I didn't, but at first I was thinking of pulling out my giant-sized man thing.
Oh, there you go.
But I decided to cover just a regular-sized man thing. So I'm doing Man Thing Number 1, Volume 2 from 1979.
Oh, that's great. Is that Steve Gerber? You said Volume 2.
Michael Fleischer.
Oh yeah, the Spectre guy. What number? Which number? Number one?
Yeah. Can you complete this, Mike? Whoever knows fear.
That's the touch of the man thing, or something like that.
The touch of the man thing. That's right.
Yeah.
Touches the man thing.
Yeah, burns at the touch.
Burns
of the
at
man.
The touch of the man thing.
What can you do? Well, I don't know if that's better or worse than the man thing burning.
As a Burning Man thing. So this is Volume 2. There's been plenty of appearances by the man thing up to this this series. So it starts out just basically introducing him walking around in a swamp, and a lot of just narrative of what he's doing and what's going on. And he's got alligators attacking him, and he it just makes a point of saying like he's got no emotion himself. He doesn't really have a consciousness.
He's actually more separated than the swamp thing, because the swamp thing, you could at least know what the thoughts and stuff are. The man thing is just kind of like he bumbles around. And then the story is all about what he runs into, like the people around him that are caught in the situation and stuff.
Yeah, he's got no. Yeah, I mean, it makes a point of saying like he doesn't really have a consciousness or anything. He's just reacts to things happening around him. So an alligator starts attacking him. He dispatches it. He doesn't have any emotion about it. the second alligator jumps at him and actually gets stuck like inside of crusted ooze there. And so it starts panicking because it's head first stuck. And of course, that's when it comes, you know, starts talking about how when things become afraid, they start and they're in contact with them, they start burning. So shows the, you know, second alligator burning to a crisp.
Have you ever read The Heap?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so The Heap has been around longer than Man Thing and Swamp Thing, but Man
Thing.
He's been all over the place. Like if you look up The Heap. I don't know if he had, let's see. Skywalled.
Oh, okay.
But The Heap, that I think he went to like wherever the Elementals were at, Kimiko or one of those companies. And actually where Airboy was. What was Airboy at? Eclipse?
I think Eclipse.
Yeah, so like The Heap started to look like the Man Thing.
Oh, interesting.
Before the Man Thing came out.
My database was adding the new update, so.
Yeah, the heap is golden age, but he's changed looks throughout the years.
I would like to go back and read or buy an old golden age issue.
There's actually a Tomorrow's like thick book called Swamp Monsters. And it like goes through the history of all the different swamp creatures. It's pretty cool. I own it.
Okay, so that just gives you the brief introduction to Man Thing, being that this is the first issue of the volume, and then we go to a university lab quite far away, and there's a Dr. Oheimer who is doing some research on brain cell regeneration. And so he's working late into the night, and as he's driving home, he gets cut off by this big truck, and these guys in masks grab him, knock him out with chloroform, and take him to this place that they're describing as like a safe house. When he comes to, they tell him that they're with the CIA, and they needed to get him away quickly and without anyone knowing where he was going, and that they need his help because of his research with Man-Thing. And they then go into the whole origin of Man-Thing and how he used to be a chemist, a biochemist, Dr. Ted Salas, and how he was doing research out in the swamp, and he was basically trying to rediscover the super soldier formula that created Captain America. And through a course of different events, some woman that he was interested in betrayed him, hired some henchmen, and tried to grab the formula for themselves to sell. He managed to get away. He injected himself with the formula so they wouldn't be able to get a sample of it. And he actually purposely drove over through a fence over a cliff to land in the swamp, thinking that with his new super strength, he'd be able to escape and be okay. And instead, the swamp waters mixed with the super soldier formula, and he became the Man Thing. And again, they make it a point where they're saying, you know, he doesn't have really any brain to speak of at all. It's just all vegetable matter. And what they want is to capture the Man Thing, use Dr. Oheimer's formula for brain cell regeneration in an effort to have the Man Thing become conscious again and perhaps be able to communicate, so they, the CIA, could be able to start making a new super soldier formula for the government. So that's basically what the plan is. So they devised this way of using subsonic sound to bother the man thing in the swamp enough that he will come to the source of his pain, which is this now this like tower that they create that they build right in the swamp. And once he's inside, they'll trap him in there, and they have another kind of like a drying out machine there that will take enough of the swamp water out of him to render him unconscious, but not to kill him. He'll be dehydrated, and then they'll kind of they'll be able to subdue him. They'll be able to inject the brain cell formula into him, and the plan is that he'll be able to start to communicate. So all of that goes off without a hitch. They manage to lure the man thing to the tower. They manage to trap him inside. They knock him out, and they go ahead and start that procedure. Oheimer explains to the other to the CIA that they can't just do it once and then he's able to communicate. He's basically, after the first try, he basically has like the mind of you know, an infant or very small child, and that it, you know, it's going to be a slow process. So slowly but surely, they repeat the injections. He starts being able to build like letter blocks, and he's and Dr. Oheimer's really treating him like he's like a son almost. He's like saying, "Good boy, Ted, good boy," and so he's like, you know, we need to get you to your original adult intellectual capacity, and then who knows, perhaps after that we can somehow find a way to restore you to your human form. So in the meantime, you find out that out in the swamp, some guys in disguise, and they're taking pictures of this lab out there, and it turns out that this film actually goes all the way up to the FBI, and they involve good old Peter Gyrich, and he turns it over to the Army. Turns out that those guys that are working with Oheimer are not the CIA, but they're an actual terrorist organization. So the FBI calls out the Army, and they storm the lab. They start fighting. They pretty much are able to get rid of these terrorists very quickly, because it's like in a whole contingent of the Army, and until it's only Oheimer and Man-Thing left. And they're like, "We're here to rescue you, Dr. Oheimer. Stand aside. We have to destroy the monster," which for some reason, this sergeant is intent on destroying the monster, where the actual orders were to only do that if they couldn't get Oheimer safe. But he's in no danger, but the sergeant decides that he needs to destroy the monster anyhow. And he goes ahead to shoot the monster, even though that's not going to, he doesn't know it, but that's not going to affect man thing. And Oheimer actually blocks the shot, and he dies. This enrages the man thing, who previously had no consciousness whatsoever and probably wouldn't have even recognized that anything had happened, because he doesn't really, it wasn't affecting him. So now that he has a consciousness and he's formed a bond with Oheimer, he falls into a rage and starts just ripping the Army soldiers to pieces, and, you know, grabs somebody, and now he's shaking with fear. And of course you see him just explode with flames. And he grabs the dead body of Oheimer and walks out into the swamp. And sure enough, you see that there's a tear in Man-Thing's eye. So he actually has some sort of feeling now, for the first time in his existence since he became Man-Thing. And that's the end of issue one. I bought this off the stand, Mike, in 1979. It's
yeah.
In the condition that you would think it might be when a 7-year-old has a comic book.
Oh, so and, probably like BG state.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely like, you can tell that I have looked through this comic book and it's been through a lot. It was really cool actually picking it up and going page by page and rereading it, where you know, I have probably haven't opened this up in, who knows how long, 30 plus years.
Did you keep good take good care of them?
No. No, this is
okay.
not at
so,
all.
So it was bent and folded.
I got 20
cents
on it because I wanted. Yeah. I apparently tried to resell comic books at one time for half the price. It's the there's
you
a
can
little
kind,
chunk out
you,
of
you can
it.
Kind of tell when you bought something off a spinner rack because they normally have like a crease like 3/4 of the way down because people would bend them so
oh,
they could
yeah.
look they could look at the other books behind it.
Yes, that's right.
So
but, I mean it's so no it's in terrible shape, but that's part of the nostalgia for me. You know what I mean? You know, I've had this since I just like, oh, this is a number one. This looks cool. 7 years old. Look at this. Cool
That's
monster.
Pretty good. Yeah, a lot of my early books were horror books, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have the first 5 issues of this that, you know, I got just buying right off the stand. And then at that point, maybe it wasn't selling as well in that convenience store that I would go to on the corner, stop carrying anything or whatever. But that was it. I had five
I've been,
issues.
I've been looking for his first appearance because it's in the magazine, but it's been pretty pricey.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm just looking at this now. It looks like so Chris Claremont picked up the writing with this starting in issue 4.
Yeah. I tend to like the volume before when it's Gerber. Like, I'm a Gerber. I'm a Gerber enthusiast. Gerber is why I collect comics. Really, I think, because of Defenders, but he's one of the guys that stood out to me when I realized comics weren't just, they were something I wanted to collect.
Yeah. So you would say you're a Gerber baby.
I'm a Gerber baby. I grew up with the formula.
That's right.
That
yeah. So that was, this is a lot of fun. I wouldn't mind reading some more of these. This was a
you could
a
get
cool
the Man
thing.
Thing omnibus.
Do they have that?
Yeah,
look that up.
Goes all the way to his first appearance. They have 2 volumes of it. In other words, they've released it twice.
Oh, okay.
It has already a second print.
I'm looking it up on Amazon.
I don't think it's cheap.
That's too bad. Here we are. Yeah. I could get the complete collection in paperback for $23
each. That's what you could do, but those are a lot smaller and they have less of the issues. But that's the way to do it.
Yeah, when it comes to Man Thing, you want it as big as
big
possible.
As possible. I got the big thing.
You got the big one?
Yeah. I have the big one.
Nice. Can't go wrong with that. The giant size one.
I don't have all the giant size Man Things.
I wish
I did.
Oh boy. All right, who wants to go next?
I'll go since no one's speaking. Bloodpool.
Did you say Bloodpool or Deadpool?
Bloodpool.
Okay.
1 through 4, except -3. So I'm doing this little experiment on Twitter where I'm learning about all the titles that ever had the word blood in it. So I'm celebrating October as Blood Month. And I ran across Bloodpool, and I wanted to read it because I'm on a Rob Liefeld kick. He created Bloodpool, but he didn't write it. Bloodpool was written by Joe Duffy and drawn by Patrick Lee. And Pat Lee has like a definitely a manga look to his style. I guess it's like a cross between a Liefeld and a manga artist. And it's pretty good.
That way from the covers.
Yeah. And what I liked about this series is it's kind of like the Seinfeld of superhero teams, because it's like It's like a comic book about absolutely nothing. These guys are kind of like losers, and I don't have their first appearance. Their first appearance is Blood Pool Special from 1996. So maybe it establishes them more in the special, and then it assumes you know them in your hit in the miniseries. But it comprised of Task. He's kind of like a super soldier type character that can regenerate, and he's sort of the leader. He co-leads with a character called Silence, who's it's spelled P and then Silence, like silence. She's a telepath, and she's mute, but she can communicate to the entire team. Fusion's a guy kind of like Firestorm, but not nearly as cool. He can like fuse things together, like he can fuse a rock into somebody's body, but he can mess with organics and non-organics, so he's a little different than Firestorm. Soul is a she's the coolest looking, but they never really exploit her powers, at least from what I've read so far. She can summon spirits of the dead to enhance her natural athletic abilities.
Which one
Rubble,
is that? Is that the one in the green costume or the red one?
the red one.
Uh-huh.
The Silence is the one in the green costume. Rubble looks a lot like Bad Rock, but he's about the size of Puck. That makes him kind of interesting, because when he you open up issue one, it's like, man, this guy's huge. Like he's like the Thing. And then when you see him in perspective of the rest of the team, he's like this little short character like Puck from Alpha Flight. And he's definitely the personality of the team. And he seems strong, and he it doesn't really he like launches himself at people. Like he can rip off his head. Like that's pretty much his go-to thing, is he takes off his head and throws it at people. Wilder is kind of like a genetically enhanced Wolverine. Although they never really utilize him. So like Fusion and Wilder, they're kind of in the background. Like they never really flush them out. There's one issue where they're running together and they're talking about things, but other than that, they don't show them that often. But in the first episode, there's this character Graves. Youngblood was a team that was run by the government, and they made a lot of money on like things like Booster Gold. Like they merchandised them. They licensed their products out. And Rob Liefeld said it was inspired by his love for the NBA, like Jordan, Nike, and all the different products that came from the NBA. He wanted to make a team that was sort of like that and made money but controlled by the government. Well, whatever happens in Youngblood, they sort of go, I guess, kind of brokish. They had an American team and an offshore team. And then they had this team, which was like, they were like the Legion, they were like the training team, the Legion of Substitute Heroes. And that is what Blood Pool is. And they sort of get fired in the first issue. Shaft comes and says, "Sorry guys, we can't pay you anymore." And then Rubble and a couple of the other guys, they feel bad because they're like, "Hey, we sacrificed everything. Like we had you guys do genetically engineer us. They were like normal people and they got genetically engineered and to be part of the government, and now you're releasing us."
Yeah, and
And
here they are.
it's like, bullshit. Now what are we gonna do?
Yeah.
Well, in the first issue, they don't know what they're gonna do. They don't have any money. They get in a car, they just take off, and they run into a heist situation in which a bunch of guys are trying to run in to hijack a millionaire and use him for ransom. And Blood Pool just happens to be there and save this guy. It's just so weird because they get in an accident that involves this guy and the guys that were chasing him, and they stop that kidnapping. So the guy writes him a check for a lot of money with a lot of zeros at the end of it, and that's how they become a team. They just run into weird circumstances They fight some stupid character called the Earth Mover. He used to be like a real estate agent, and now he's like controlling people. But it's just such an odd title, and they don't do much. Like it's more of them just that's why I compare him to the Seinfeld group. But it's sort of entertaining, and it was supposed to like there's some great ads in this. Like I was like. I found an ad for Thunder Agents done by Rob Liefeld, and I was like, "Where is this? I want to get this." Well, that never happened. But it led me down a lot of rabbit holes. Like there was a couple of other books that, like Maxim Age, and a couple other titles that I didn't have, like Extreme Destroyer, and a couple of things that I'm gonna head down, and I've added them to my comicshop.com order because I'm still trying to get all of the original Extreme Studios stuff along with Todd McFarlane and everybody else. But yeah, it was entertaining. It was a really, really fun book.
That's cool.
If you like Youngblood, you'll like this. And Joe Duffy was known for Catwoman. For you people that know DC, then she wrote Catwoman.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Pat Lee, I think, was known for, he became popular for doing Transformers when they went to Dreamweave. But I like his style. It's very, very strange. It's like a hybrid between an American type style and a manga style. Yeah. And I've started reading more manga, so I'm more acceptable of it. I like it more. Couple of years ago, I probably wouldn't have liked this.
Yeah.
About a decade ago, I wouldn't have opened it.
Do you have any idea what caused that change?
I don't know. As I get older, I like everything. You can mention any crappy comic that. And I'll go to it and read it, and I'll find something I like. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's closer that I'm closer to death, that I'm more accepting of everything.
Like as long as it's got pictures and word balloons,
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm good. But I have to be
Well,
in the
that's a
mood, which helps. So, like,
yeah.
this I was in the mood for. If I wasn't in the mood for this, yeah, I wouldn't have liked it as much. But I wanted this. Like I've been in the Liefeld mood lately, so this scratched an itch for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, that's a good transition for me because I was going to talk about manga chapter again. And you'll be happy, Mike, that I actually read this in a physical copy.
Oh yeah.
But this is Urusei Yatsura. I'll type the name of that into chat for you after I'm done talking, Mike,
Okay.
for the show notes.
Yeah, 'cause I won't even know what that is.
Yeah, I guess it means obnoxious people or something like that. But it's the first. If you've heard of Ranma, or Inuyasha, it's Rumiko Takahashi. They gave her an Eisner Award at one point. She's a really well-known mangaka. And I know her because of Ranma Half, which was one of the series I bought on like super expensive VHS tapes back in the day. When that was like the only way to, unless your Blockbuster had some, which mine did, but it didn't have Ranma. That was like kind of the only way to, there wasn't any streaming or anything like that in the 90s, obviously. And it was expensive, but this series is also pretty well known in anime and manga. You might have seen the one character from it, Lum. She's like an alien girl. The only thing that's alien about her is she's got these two little horns because she's technically a race called an ogre, but she looks like pretty much looks human except for these little horns, and she wears like a tiger stripe bikini all the time.
Well, that is alien-like.
Yeah. But it's pretty much a comedy series. The setup is that that she and her people come to invade the Earth, and there's this young man that named Ataru, who has to race her, and it's like a game of tag where he has to touch her horns in 10 days or her people are going to take over the Earth. And that's like the first story, where he ultimately is successful and stops the invasion, but through this misunderstanding, like, he's got this girl, Shinobu, who he likes, and a human girl, and she tries to motivate him by saying that she'll marry him if he wins the race. But there's when he wins the race, there's this misunderstanding where Lum thinks that he's proposing to her, and it all gets caught on national cameras and stuff like that. So he's feels kind of stuck because they see it as this good will marriage to unite the humans and the ogres. So that's the setup, and it creates this scenario where Lum ends up living at his house and is constantly bothering him, and he tries to sneak away and spend time with Shinobu, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with Lum, and she's always making his life miserable. And meanwhile, his friends are obsessed with Lum and try to come around and hang out with them just so they can be around her and things like that. So I was going to talk about chapter 5, which is called Between a Rock and a Hard Place, and it takes place when it's about Lum. It turns out she has her own true fiance that's of her own race that shows up on Earth as well. And it starts out with Ataru is trying to sneak in a phone call to Shinobu to try to make plans with her while Lum is sleeping. And Lum wakes up, of course, and interferes with the phone call and tries to make Shinobu jealous and everything. Eventually, like I said, Shinobu's, or rather Lum's, fiance shows up, and for whatever reason, he has this situation where he's constantly, did I pick the right? There we go. Okay. So he looks like a ram or some kind of animal. He transforms in between his human looking form and his ram animal shape form. So at first they think it's some kind of monster. It turns out he's this guy named Ray, and he's super handsome, and Ataru's mom sees him, and she's like, "Who's that?" She disappears, and some things happen. So trying to tell Lum that she should go back to her home planet with Ray, and she's like, "No, I I prefer Ataru, because whenever Ray gets excited, he turns into this beast character, so as this is going on, all of a sudden, Ataru's mom comes back and she's brought some steamed sweet potatoes and put on makeup. Because she thinks Ray is like really handsome, and Ray kisses her hand, and she gets embarrassed, and she runs away. And Ataru's dad is upset because his wife has put on makeup to flirt with this young man. So the hijinks continue from there, basically. And Lum is clinging to Ataru and claims that she's pregnant just to get Shinobu worked up and upset. And Ray turns into a beast again and starts chasing Ataru around the room because he's angry as well. And then challenges Ataru to a duel. They end up having like going outside at night, and there's all these onlookers for this duel between Ataru and Rei, and it turns out to be a sweet potato eating contest. Ataru's mom comes out and is trying to figure out what happened, and she starts cheering on Rei, and doesn't realize her husband is right behind her, and he's like, "How could you? Don't abandon me." And Ataru's having trouble finishing all the sweet potatoes, and Lum wants him to win, so she runs out and starts shoving sweet potatoes down his throat. Apparently when Rei overeats, that causes him to transform into this beast, and he can't transform back. And so the chapter ends with Ataru's mom's consoling Rei and his, I guess he's kind of like a cow, a tiger-striped cow. So she's consoling the cow. But and says, "I do hope you'll be back to your handsome self again." And her husband is crying because, like, saying, "You prefer that cow to me." And meanwhile, Ataru is being pulled on by Lum and Shinobu. It's one of those things that it's like explaining a joke, you know. It's a lot of it's the humor is conveyed through the character's expressions and the way that it's written and stuff, but it's I'm definitely having fun with it. It's older. It's from like the early 80s.
Wow.
That's when it originally came out. But Viz Media is putting out, started putting out new collected editions where it's like two volumes in one in a larger format for manga. And it's nice. They
are they the hard covered ones or no?
No, that's soft cover.
Oh, okay.
But I know it's a little bit bigger.
Viz has been collecting like four of those or four mangas into one hardcover, and that's the way I've been reading it, those big fat hardcover stuff.
Of manga in general, you mean?
Yeah. And the hardcovers, yeah, though, are kind of like, usually I navigate to hardcovers, but mm-hmm. for manga format, I don't like them because I like that I can read a lot of the story, but they're hard to hold, because it's like if you take four mangas and shove it into a hardcover, but it's the size of a manga, it's just a weird to hold, because you have to like hold your fingers a certain way to hold it open, because it's so small.
Yeah, I can see that. No, this is nice. I mean, it's like it's a little bit bigger than manga normally is, and then it's about like maybe 400 pages. It's one thing that's kind of cool is it has some notes, like I think about like 4 pages total of notes that references different like explains certain cultural references that if you're Japanese and reading it, you would understand, but you might not get if you're like cultural references you might not get as an American or a Westerner. So that's kind of cool. Kind of a nice addition. It's got these data files are just kind of like a little extra that the first one talks about the town where the manga takes place. It's not a real town, but it like looks at just some different aspects of the community and stuff. And I'm not sure what the second one talks about. I haven't gotten to it yet, but it's neat to have just a little extra in there. So, but yeah, it's been entertaining.
Cool deal.
Yeah, nice.
Rob, do you read any manga, or have you ever even gone down that path?
No, I haven't. I've never gone down that path. I'm not opposed to it. I just haven't.
Yeah, I struggled with it for a long, long time. And you know what got me into it is the horror.
Yeah. I mean, I love Japanese horror movies.
Yeah, so you'd probably dig it. I mean, that's the one genre that I've been navigating, that / sci-fi.
Yeah, that's cool. If there's anything in particular you can think of that you think that in the horror vein that you think I might like.
The Drifting Classroom is really good.
Drifting Classroom?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
That's what got me in. Yeah. Sort of.
That is one thing that's neat is that there's so many different genres within manga, even more so than with American comics. You know, there's a lot of variety.
A lot of variety, a lot of different ratings. A lot of shock horror too. Like there's some crazy stuff you can imagine. Most of the stuff that I like is from Viz, though. I've played around with a couple.
The biggest.
I've played around with other things like Ghost Ship and a couple other ones, and the only one I like is the Harem Worlds Apart or something like that. But that's like a Why the Last Man type story. But a lot of them are like I've read some Succubus stuff, and some other weird stuff, and they're just real sexual. Like I didn't get into them. So I'm trying to pick the, I kind of like know how to shop for what I want now, at least.
You know, my only obstacle is I don't know Japanese.
You don't have to, you just have to be able to read backwards.
Are these Drifting Classroom collections backwards also?
Yeah. Once you can read, once you get past it, you're reading from right to left too. So that's you're reading backwards and from right to left. But yeah. Once you get past one book, like your mind adjusts. I just had a hard time getting through Well, my first few books that I read in manga, I read from front to back and from left to right. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? This makes no sense whatsoever. And I didn't snap until like 2 books later when I got to the end and it said, start here. Or there was like a, nobody told me I had to read the other way. And,
So what's classroom about? Like, what's the just the basic premise?
Drifting Classroom?
Because I see it here on Amazon, the hardcover for $23, volume one.
It's sort of like this asshole kid that you don't really like, but it's centered around him and he's going to school and all of a sudden the school. Have you ever read James Tynion's The Woods?
Yes.
That's kind of like that. You know how the school just like warped and left our world?
Yeah.
That's what the Drifting Classroom is.
Oh, okay.
And it's like Lord of the Flies with a school because you have these different tiers. You have really young kids, and then you have, your high schoolers, and they're all in the same school. And that they have to figure out how to survive in a world where adults are no longer there. There were some teachers
Yeah,
that
I was just
went
about
there,
to.
but they went freaking nuts, man. Those teachers,
Really?
they lost their marbles. They came,
Oh,
yeah,
God.
they couldn't deal with the situation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I will have to give that a try. $20 is
And
not
then
a
if you like
price tag.
crime horror, I guess, like Seven and stuff.
Yeah.
MPHD Psycho is MPD Psycho is a good one. I think
Okay.
Dark Horse put that one out.
Very interesting, sir.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna have to take a look at this.
They're really quick reads too. Like they're thick, but they don't have a lot of density to them in terms of like words. At least the ones I've experienced.
I was looking at the Drifting Classroom, like you know how you can look inside on the Amazon. So I was going through, and I mean, definitely does not seem super wordy by any means.
Yeah. It's kind of cool if you like post-apocalyptic and like, and the other thing, the thing I liked about Drifting Classroom is there's like an emotional linkage between the boy and the mom. So the mom's like in the real world, and there's like a tear in the fabric of reality, and sometimes she can sense her son. So it's sort of interesting.
That's cool. And that's just what I need. I'm sure you'd agree is more comic books to buy.
It in reality, like if I didn't want to like read something different, like I was just craving something different, I would not go down that realm. Like
Yeah.
if there's too much other stuff that I'd rather get, but I thought dri what got me back into manga was the free comic book day. Cause they visited like a flip book. And they did Drifting Classroom and the other one, and I liked that one too. So I ended up buying both of them, and I ended up liking them. So, and then the other one I just tried because it said like Why the Last Man, and I was like, oh, that's interesting, and I liked that one quite a bit.
Yeah. And Chris, I don't know how much you were following, but Bill Bomer has asked me to stop buying lots of comic books in the next few years.
Oh,
Yeah, I mean, he had a good point. He's talking to Mike a couple months ago and said, really, at what point, like, at what age do you no longer have to, like, keep buying large, like, what is the purpose still to keep buying large amounts of comic books or to like get your like still get like so-called grails? Like if I'm 70 years old, do I need to finally have picked up, I'm just going to make something up, but let's just say Avengers number one, right? What do I need Avengers number one for when I'm 70? What am I going to do with that? I'm going to be dead.
What are you going to do with it now?
What? Exactly. That's very true. And I was actually thinking about that. I'm like, at least like when you're
Chris
younger,
already went through that, and that's why he purged everything.
I'm building a collection. I love, you know, reading these things. I'm going to have these for a long period of time. But when you're an older person, it's like, do you really still need to keep accumulating that stuff? So I took that to heart, and I think in the next 5 years I'm going to try to phase myself out of buying new comics and old ones as well. Just try to go digital, like the subscriptions, the DC Universe and the Marvel Unlimited. I can read that one. Keep enjoying the stories. Doesn't mean I need to buy them.
The thing is, Bill never stopped, so whatever he said doesn't even affect him. So take that for what it's worth.
I am, obviously, and I hope you know, but I am exaggerating. But
yeah, it makes sense because when you get older, I don't know what's going to happen, but you might want to move into like a less into something that's like taken care of. Like you don't want to do your yard anymore. You don't want to do certain things. Well, you might. I actually find peace in mowing the lawn. I don't know why. I want to do more physical labor. I would like to do more physical labor than mental labor. I've been doing mental labor my entire life. And I don't know. There's something a little bit. Like you always. I don't know if you guys have hit that age, but sometimes you start asking yourself, well, what do I want to do when I grow up? it might not be what you're currently doing now, but,
I just want to, my problem is I've never had a passion to do something. And now like whenever I could retire, I would love to just sit and just do whatever I feel like doing at the moment.
Yeah. I would like to do that. Like, I'm sure that you'd get bored. Like I can't speak for myself because I can't see it happening. Like I see retirement as like I have so much that and I like to walk. I like to do hikes. I like to do different things. So I don't have to spend a lot of money, and I could still like enjoy myself.
Yeah.
But I don't see myself getting bored, but I'm pretty sure it could happen. And then I'll like ask myself, well, what would I want to do? Well, I think if comic shops still exist when I retire, I would like to work on them. And a lot of them don't pay anything. A lot of them pay you by comics or whatever. But if I could find a way to do that, then I could continue to read. 'Cause I'd be in the comic store around all these comics. I can continue to read comics and not have to buy them or get them. And the other thing is, like, the digital thing is viable. I just don't like it. Like, I like it for podcasting for sure. Because, like, when me and Kyle are covering some DC, I, you know, open up the DC app and we have, like, so much to choose from. And now that they're going to a six-month cycle, which is more like Marvel Unlimited, you're pretty covered digitally, like with Marvel Unlimited and the DC app. You just need to find like something like Comixology Unlimited. That's still kind of chaos to me. Yeah. I'd rather have something like, ooh, I have Aftershock Unlimited or Scout Unlimited or Image Unlimited to go that route.
Comixology Unlimited is like a sample service.
Yeah,
it is like, right. Yeah,
but basically,
that's a good way to describe it.
But because it's like that, I mean, it's great. It's got a lot of content, but it doesn't have like everything. I'd rather have something like Marvel Unlimited and an Image Unlimited would be great.
I really think that Image may be able to exist on its own, but be nice for like the other publishers to get together.
And make their own service,
Yeah, I mean, that's what Comixology is supposed to kind of be, but I think what Chris said that hits it right on the head is it's a sample thing, and that's not what you
You want.
necessarily want. You want
Yeah.
something that's going to be, all encompassing for a lot of different types of publishers. So you could go from A to Z all the way through, not just sample the first trade and then now you're on your own. But I would think that I'm not sure that Comixology is ever going to do that. So I don't know what the solution with that is. To your point, I much prefer reading things just physically rather than digitally.
Yeah,
It's
so do I.
just,
There's
it,
the.
it's just, I don't know. It's a whole
It's
different.
almost like for me, it's almost like a letter grade. Like if something I read digitally is a B, it might have been an A if I read it in print. That that's how I feel about my reading experience. That's how much it adds to it. And it has to do with I'm sure I'd feel different if my occupation wasn't in front of a computer screen all day long.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, so I'm gonna be 49 in February, so it's not like I have to just stop buying things, but just in a larger picture, just and you guys weren't discussing that either one of you were like, and Bill, I mean, he didn't say, "Oh, I'm
We
gonna stop doing this."
discuss old age a lot on Geek
We're just
Brunch.
having a really good discussion, and just some of the stuff that he said really, probably just offhand, really just as I'm listening, really kind of hit me because I've always been, no matter what it is, I've been a collector. It's like I want all of whatever, right? And
That's the hard part. If you can crack that nut, let me know how you do it, because that's the piece of the puzzle I can't. Because for me, it's not just the reading experience.
it's the
It's the hoarding. It's the I gotta have it. I have it to another extreme, and it's even worse for me than you, because I like will read something. I am so much into like ads and stuff. Like I'll read something and then I'll say, "Oh, that came out? Now I want to read that." And I can just like go down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. I'm the squirrel reader of comics. Like I just read an ad and I'm like, "I want to read that right now." And if I don't have it in my basement, then I want to figure out how I can read it. So, like editor's notes or ads or any of that stuff, it just squirrel. I'm gone. I'm on something else, and that's why I'm not as focused as you on like, oh, I want to complete a run of this, because I want it all. Like I want every Marvel comic, every DC comic, every Kamiko, every Eclipse, everything.
It's
But
very, it's very.
and then it's the collector mentality. Like, there's one thing to be a reader, but then the other part of the hobby is collecting. And if you love collecting as much, it's harder to break. Because the reading could be done still, even at the library and stuff, but you still don't have it. So if you can crack that nut.
100%.
If you can crack that
100%.
nut, when you crack that nut, Rob, talk to me and tell me how you get past it.
Yeah, I'm
But
not sure I'm ever going to be able. I really don't. I don't think, but I don't know. At the same time, it's like what he said, and he said it just offhandedly, but what he said made sense. And like, I used to think like it would be a birthday or Christmas, and you'd be like asking my parents, like, oh, what do we get? What do you think grandma and grandpa want, or something like that? The answer was always not, they don't want any. Give them a gift card to Wegmans, the grocery store. What are you talking about? Why would I? And it's because, they were older. It's like they didn't want more things. There's no more things they needed. And in my head, it didn't make any sense. And now,
now it's
and
starting
again,
to
we're
make
not super
sense.
old men, but But now, yeah, we're getting older, and it's like, now I can understand that, at least understand that mentality. I'm not in that mentality now, but now I can understand it. I can understand in 10
years. You start asking, well, like, what am I going to do with all this shit?
Right. And that it's like, it was like, it's just conceptual. It's like, in 10 years from now, do I really need to spend whatever amount of money on some sort of, like, one issue of a comic book that I had wanted in the past? Like, I don't know anymore what that's going to do for me. Whereas when I was younger, and honestly, even still to some extent now, it's just exciting. It's like, oh my God, I've always wanted this issue. Now I own this issue. You know?
I love every aspect of comic books. There's only one aspect I don't like, and that's space, and that you have to lug these things around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time, I don't mind filing comics. I don't mind putting them into my database. I love it. I don't mind bagging and boarding. I don't even mind merging. The part I hate, and I hate with a passion, and it makes me second guess everything, is going up and down flights of stairs with boarded and bagged comics in a drawer box.
Yeah.
It takes a toll on your body. Like, I used to be able to do like 25, no big deal. Boom, upstairs, downstairs. And now I swear to you, if I do more than 6, I'll fall down the fucking stairs. Like, I'm at that age where I need the handrail and I can't use the handrail. And it's dangerous. Like, I'm like, this is not a game anymore.
No, I'm not far off from you. Now, my problem is, and there's no way that I do not have the energy, the mental or physical energy to now convert these all, but all I have are long boxes. And so you're talking so many long boxes. There's no way I'm going through and converting all these into short boxes. But at the same time, if I've got long boxes upstairs that I need to go take to the basement,
yeah,
I'll do two. I'll bring one all the way down.
Wait till you get a little older. It's gonna be worse.
I know.
I don't even know how you do long boxes. Like, I'm struggling with the short boxes. So. Yeah, Bill actually said to me that he's not doing long boxes anymore. In the last, he said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I never did. I never did long boxes because I just think they're too unwieldy and annoying.
When I think that we moved, you know, when each of us moved out of our respective parents' homes to move into this house now 19 years ago, that I literally lugged all those boxes, which, again, I didn't have as many as I do now, but I still had maybe 40 long boxes. And I put them all in a U-Haul, and I took them all out. How did I do that?
Yeah, that's the one nightmare. Like, if I have to move, like, how the fuck am I going to move this shit?
Right.
And Barb's like, you just hire College Hunks hiling junk, but I don't trust them with my shit. Like, I'm so protective, like, of my comics that I would have to hire coworkers or whatever and say, you watch these motherfuckers. I want 100% coverage.
Yep. Yeah. It's interesting. It's just a lot to think about in the long term as as we age and stuff. It's like, I'm not, you know, like a 28-year-old who, you know, like, oh my God, I just want to keep buying, get like all the special like issues I've always wanted as a kid. I gotta think about stuff like that now. I'm like, I don't know exactly what I want to do. I mean, here I am at one, because I'm not being totally disingenuous when I'm saying, well, I gotta think about this and maybe think about where I'm gonna want to start cutting back. But at the same time, Mike, when I placed my DCBS order for the current previews that's out. I mean with
you went nuts.
Hard covers. It was probably higher than it's been in months and months.
Yep. And then there's been times where I said, oh, I'm gonna be disciplined. This is gonna happen. And then I do it like 2 months, and it's like I feel empty. It's so weird. I feel like something's missing. Like something that used to be attached to my body is no longer attached to my body. And then I have to go get them. Like if I took a month, 2 months off, I end up getting those books anyway. So it's so weird.
It is.
Yeah. There's worse things to be addicted to, but
100%.
yeah.
Absolutely. Listen, interesting talk. That was, it's just, there's a lot to just think about in general, especially with the space. And like you said, I mean, I love putting comics in the database. I feel like not only am I adding it to the collection, I'm adding it to the collection in the database. And it's like, isn't it a beautiful thing to like bring up a title and see everything shaded in that blue that you
Yeah.
have the run? It's like that's part of the
Yeah, it's
collection
like
right
right
now. So.
now, I almost have a full run of Cable. I'm missing like 6 issues now. So like
Yeah.
I it went from like hardly anything over the past year in Cable to almost having a full run, 154 issues and a couple annuals. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's like a feeling of
And
accomplishment.
I
It's like,
like going to the comic shop and say, well, I finished Cable. Well, now what else do I want to
yep, going like Chris going to Dave and Adams, and you've got an like a huge, huge, huge rows of 50-cent long boxes where you can just, I could sit there, and if I wanted to, I could be there for 2 or 3 hours just going through every single box. It's, I mean, it is. I enjoy that as well. So it's not easy.
That's the same for the toys for me. Like there's certain toys I absolutely like love, but I'm really picky now. But at some point I gotta get rid of these things. And a lot of the toys that I had, with the exception of maybe the last decade, I haven't even opened. Like I was one of those collectors that wanted to keep them pristine.
Yeah, you were like Al from Al's Toy Barn and Toy
Yeah,
Story
so like
too.
you'll see all my Toy Biz and all those old toys, they're still in boxes.
All those poor toys—they just want to be played with, Mike.
Yeah. I
Yep.
do like opening up my Marvel Legends because the points of articulation on those toys are amazing. Like the different poses you can put on a Marvel Legends figure, it's fantastic. I love opening them.
They are, and I probably would have way more if they were like $10 each instead of like 20.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not saying they're not worth it. It's just that I don't have that money to spend, on
But I
so many
still
of them.
like them. Like I like DC, like the characters more. Like DC means way more to me than Marvel. But toy-wise, like even if I go get the McFarlane Batman or Nightwing, they're still not like those Marvel Legends.
I think he's doing
Like
a
those.
fabulous job with them, but I would love to see a wider variety of characters, like a little bit more, throw some obscure characters in there, like the Legends
Right. He's focusing
does.
a lot on Batman and Superman, like different versions of them, and
Like,
then he like he I don't need like an I don't know about you, Rob, but I don't like the toys that are TV or movie related. Like
Neither. Video
I
games.
don't I stay away those like the fungus, man. I just can't. I everything looks worse on screen to in my perspective. So like I want the comic book versions of them.
I'm 100% like he's got all those Arkham Asylum versions. I don't want any of those. I don't
Yeah.
really. I've never played the game. I don't really care. I just want the actual comic book versions of these
And he's got a
characters.
bunch of them like that are different versions of Batman, and I just rather have like he came out with a Nightwing recently. They don't sell very well at Target. There's like so many Nightwings there. But like the Batmans still sell well. The Supermans are usually gone. But Nightwings, they just don't sell. Harlequin's gone by the time that it gets there. Like it's
Well,
sold out right away.
I mean, with that, like, I understand why they do it because obviously those are the ones that sell. But I would love to see, just some, throw a random JSA character in there and or a Legion of Superheroes character. I mean, that would be awesome. All of a sudden, he had like three or four Legion of Superheroes characters, or like stuff that are just
Have
really.
you ever seen that DC Direct limited edition Legion of Superheroes box?
Yes, I
That
have.
box is
Awesome.
amazing.
I do
I mean,
not
it
own
goes
it.
like for $700 now or something, but it is like it is so like I saw it at the la when there were conventions, I saw it at one convention and I was like, God, I want this so bad.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've only seen pictures. I've never actually seen it in person.
Yeah, I saw it in person and I was like, this is neat. It's kind of weird though. They have like Invisible Kid or whatever, and he's just not there. It doesn't, there's no figure there.
Perfect. Gotta use imagination.
Yeah. That is one set though. Like, you'd want to open, but you don't want to open because the box itself is like an incredible display.
Yeah, it is. It's I'm actually trying to find it. I can't find it online just to look at that box.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely. Oh, maybe I found it here. This has got to be it
Yeah, that
because
was a
it's
quite the vector there, Rob.
$698. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, the 12-pack. Get it for $698.99.
Yeah.
Comes with a Legion ring too.
See, if you're ever in my basement, there's a whole wall of boxed DC Direct figures because I used to buy every single one of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I only stopped about, I don't know, 6 years ago. So I had every single DC Direct toy. Except that one was, except for those like limited edition things.
Yeah.
Because they came out with a limited edition Doom Patrol too. Like where
Did they?
Elastigirl is like huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the full display there with Invisible Kid. Spot where a figure could go. Oh, that
That
is
was an
fantastic.
easy kill, huh?
That
I that's an amazing
Oh,
toy
that's
set.
awesome. I love that.
I was looking at like even Liefeld had like these die-cast Youngblood characters. I don't even remember them ever coming out. And I remember Savage Dragon had a cartoon which kind of had the toys, but I never got any of the toys. I wish I did.
Yeah, I didn't have
And I
anything
think
like
McFarlane had some other Image Creator toys at one point. I don't know if I have them or not. I wish I had a toy database like I did my like I do my comics.
Yeah, that would be cool. All
You
right,
need to set
so.
up your own one, like on a spreadsheet or something.
No, I can create my own because I'm a programmer, so I just use like a back end like Access or SQL, MySQL or something like that, and just write a C sharp interface to it or something.
I don't know what the heck you just said. C sharp? Are you gonna? What are you playing the piano or something? I don't.
That's a language. It's like C++.
It's
It's
gonna be
my
a. It's gonna
language
be
of
the second
choice.
movie in a row of him playing. It's gonna be a sequel to his original movie about playing the piano.
All right, I'll cover another comic. I've got another Halloween comic for you after the man thing. Got The Crypt of Terror, number 19. Now, this is the last issue of The Crypt of Terror before it becomes Tales from the Crypt. So, this is an entertaining comic
Oh, is
from the
this an EC
1950s.
ver comic?
Oh, yeah, from 1950.
Oh, wow. And
Crypt of Terror.
you have this actual comic. It's not a reprint.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? No.
A reprint?
I have the EC archives.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So this has several tales, horror tales in it, as they always do, and very entertaining. The first one is called The Ghost Ship, and what you have is newlyweds that are flying on their private plane for their honeymoon, and they encounter a huge, huge fog bank, and they kind of what he first tries to do is he tries to fly up over the fog, and he just can't make it. He's actually pulling up too hard, and he can't make it, and actually the motor sputters out, and so obviously it starts falling, and he manages to see a opening in the fog, and you know, sees the ocean ahead of him, and he's able to pull up enough that his the plane crashes into the ocean, but they're okay. They quickly get out of the plane and inflate their life raft, and after floating out on the ocean, still within this fog that is not going away after two full days, they encounter an old, decrepit wooden ship, and it looks just like a ship from, like, say, the 1700s or the 1800s, and he wants to go up there and explore. She's afraid to, but he's like, we can't just stay in this life raft. Obviously, this is much bigger. Maybe there's still food or water on board. We haven't eaten or drank anything in almost 2 days. So there's a rope ladder. They go ahead and they tie up their life raft, and they climb up. And the first thing they see is a skeleton lashed to the helm. They see another skeleton up on the sails, the sails that are just deteriorating to almost nothing. But there is a light on, and they had noticed that before. There's a light on in the cabin, and they peer through, and they see a hunched over figure reading a book. By lantern light. And so they manage to get over to that part of the ship, and they open the door, and there's absolutely nobody there. But the book is still there, and it's the ship's log. So they start reading about it, and it starts out with this particular captain, Henry Dragoon, and they find out that this was a pirate vessel, and they had just sunk a British frigate and took all the jewels and gold coins, and the captain decided to split it 50-50, meaning he got 50 and the rest of the crew got 50. Now, the crew, of course, wasn't very happy about it, and after a few more entries by the ship's captain, it abruptly stops, and it turned out that at this point they had killed all the other officers, and only the captain had remained. Then the next entry is a different in different handwriting, and it's the guy who took over Henry Dragoon's position, and they had made him walk the plank, and he had swore a curse on them that he's going to come back for revenge just before they made him go off into the ocean. And this new captain named Groggins, he, of course, started searching the ship for all of the booty that the previous captain had kept for himself, and he can't find it. And after the course of a couple weeks, the crew are getting very angry. They don't believe that he can't find it. They think now that he's hiding it for himself, like the previous guy did, and they give him one more day, and he still can't find it. And so they end up killing him as well. And at this point, they get stuck in like a huge, huge bed of seaweed in the middle of the ocean, and there's absolutely no wind at all. Their sails are just down, and they're not moving, no breeze at all. And there's a debate. A bunch of them want to go out in the small boats and leave. A few decide that they want to stay because they just think they're too far out in the ocean. It turns out most of them go. Three guys stay, and including the third, now who is the third captain. And they see an albatross. There's some debate whether or not they should kill it, but they know that that's bad luck. So they decide not to. A huge storm ends up hitting. Their sails are full again, but they're still stuck in this sea of seaweed. However, one of the guys goes ahead and in the middle of the storm lashes himself to the helm to try to get them out of there. The second guy, he goes up on the mizzenmast to try to see if he can help steer them out. And he ends up being strangled up there. Of course, we know what happens to the guy at the helm, and he ends up dying right where he is as well. And the last entry is that this third captain named John Bates, he says that the storm is absolutely wild. You know, Johnson remains tied to the helm. Carter strangled himself up in the mast, and the water is beginning to fill the hold, and we're sinking fast. And that's the absolute last entry. So the couple just can't believe it. And then they end up reading that there's one more entry, and now it's back in the original handwriting by Henry Dragoon, who had been killed, you know, early in the previous year in those entries. And it says, the ship is mine again. I will sail it into eternity, Captain Henry Dragoon. So they just can't believe it. And all of a sudden they hear a foghorn and they rush out to the deck and they see a vessel, a huge tanker ship, a modern day tanker ship. And so they start shouting, we're here, you know, come and get us. And they notice that the thing's not slowing down. It's coming right at them. And it ends up going right through the ship as if the ship has no substance at all. And so they run back to their life raft. And once they get on their life raft, they start shouting again. And this time the crew on the tanker hear them and end up bringing them on board. And they try to tell them their story and they think that it was due to exposure and dehydration. And they don't believe a word that the newlyweds have to say. The next story is called The Hungry Grave, and it involves a man and woman. The woman's married to another man, and she's in love with this man named Jim. Her name's Ida, and her husband's name is Ed, and they've made a plan to kill Ed, and he's quite rich, so she'll inherit the money, and then she'll live with Jim. And so what they're doing is they're digging up a grave, an existing grave. They're taking that body out, throwing it in an old mausoleum, and then they're going to go back to the house, get Ed, who they've given a large amount of arsenic to, and he should be dead by the time they get back. They'll throw him in this coffin, this existing coffin, recover it up, and nobody will ever think to look in a grave that's been there for years. So she makes it a point to tell Jim how she's been poisoning him with poisoning Ed with arsenic slowly over the course of quite some time, but she's never had the nerve to really give him a lot and actually kill him. So, but this has given her the nerve to do it now that she's got Jim. So they go back to the house and they left him on the couch where he was having a drink that was full of the arsenic. And they get there and nobody's sitting on the couch. So Jim starts almost losing his nerve. And Ida says, no, we got to see where he is. Maybe he started walking away and then he died, you know, somewhere else in the house. And Jim's freaking out. He said, well, maybe the police saw him and broke in. What if, you know, what's going on? So they hear some moaning from downstairs in the cellar. And they go on down there. And Ed's sitting down in the wine cellar, just pouring himself some drinks. And so they whisper to each other, and Ida figures that she must have not given him enough arsenic in all those little doses she's been giving him over the course of several weeks and months have made him tolerant to it, and it wasn't enough to actually kill him. So she has to send Jim all the way back to the graveyard and rebury the guy. And she calls him the next morning and says, listen, we're going to try this again. I'm going to, you know, really, really up the amount, give him the whole bottle, and I'll throw him in a sack, and then you come pick him up and throw him in the grave. So he reluctantly goes along with it. He's nervous again. But he goes ahead, goes back to the graveyard, digs it up again, goes back to the house. Sure enough, right on the floor in front of the couch is a tied up sack with a person in it. He picks it up, throws it into the open casket. He hears moaning, and he's like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. And he's about to hit Ed over the head with a shovel, but he decides that's just too violent. So he just closes the casket, throws all the dirt on top, thinking, okay, he'll die from, you know, he'll suffocate in there. And then he goes running back to the house. He rings the doorbell for Ida. And of course, who opens the door but Ed? And he's like, yeah, I heard you guys last night over planning on poisoning me. So I poisoned her instead. Come on in, Jim. And you see that he's got a hand axe behind his back, and he's waiting for Jim to enter the house. So that was the end of that one. A pretty, pretty cool story. And then we have one that's called Caveman. And this at an institute that are having exhibits. This one guy's been working on his own exhibit for quite some time, perfecting it. Apparently, it's going to be really, really going to knock the scientific community on its ear. And it promises to give him a lot of fame and wealth and security in life. And it turns out that one of his coworkers had been off on a dig up in the Arctic and has discovered a fully frozen Neanderthal that hasn't been deteriorated at all. So the head of the institute orders this poor guy to get everything ready for the Neanderthal and put his own project on the back burner that he's been working on so hard. So the guy in the Arctic comes back, the professor, and he's got the Neanderthal on a big block of ice, and they go ahead, and of course it's a huge, enormous success. Nobody's paying attention to this other guy's project. He's very, very bitter and upset about this. They got the Neanderthal carefully out of the ice. They have him in a frozen exhibit in that, you know, like with a cave and other kind of like a diorama of what he would have been in at that time. So late at night over the weekend where everything's closed, this guy that's very bitter over everything concocts a plan and goes in there, grabs the Neanderthal, puts him out on the roof of the institute for the whole weekend, thinking that that's going to just totally rot them to nothing. And then everyone will pay attention to the project that he'd been working on. So he comes back the next day to put the body back. And he's like, well, it looks like it thawed out a little, but it hasn't decomposed at all. Like, what the hell? I guess the sun wasn't strong enough. I'm going to have to wait until next weekend to try this again. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to have to put this back because we're reopening. So he starts putting it back, and he starts seeing the Neanderthal twitch a little bit. And sure enough, he sits right up, and it wasn't that he was dead at all. He was in suspended animation, and the Neanderthal starts going nuts. He looks at his environment and doesn't recognize anything. He starts throwing things around. He throws the professor into a pillar and everything else, and then he sees out of the corner of his eye, the Neanderthal sees his diorama, which looks a lot more familiar to him. So he goes in there, and the door closes behind him. and he is trying to get out. He's trying to get out, and he can't get out anymore. And he's standing there. And of course, it's super cold in this diorama to originally have kept him frozen. And he just freezes up. The next morning, the rest of the crew arrive, and they find the professor dead on the floor with a broken neck. And they don't understand what could have happened. They just can only guess that he had been jealous and may have accidentally fallen off of the balcony above and landed on the floor. And so the competing professor says, well, he must have gone mad trying to destroy my ASA because, look, the Neanderthal is lying on the ground. I'm going to have to pick him back up. I'm like, at least there wasn't any damage to him. And so that's the end of that one. And we only have one more called Zombie. And in this one, we're in Haiti. And a reporter comes. He wants to do an article about about voodoo and everything else. So he goes to a friend's plantation, and they start hearing drums beating off into the woods. And the owner explains that it's voodoo night, and the natives start. They go and do a black magic ritual, and. He's like, oh, I got to get a camera and take a look at this. And the owner begs him not to go, begs the reporter, don't go. It's not safe. And he's like, no, I'll be careful. So what he ends up seeing is the Haitians have a casket, and they are carrying it over, and they've got a big burning pyre. And they also have a big pole in front of it. And they open up the casket, and there's a decayed woman in it. They prop her up against the pole, and as they're doing their chants, she's actually coming back to look alive, look young and alive again. And she starts to begin to walk, but he goes ahead and takes a picture, and he forgot he has his flash on, and everyone notices the flash. They all stop, they stare. He goes running back to the plantation. In the meantime, you see the woman just like plop and fall over. So he gets back and he tells the owner what had happened. He's like, oh my God. He's like, you saw the white zombie. He's like, what's the white zombie? So the owner talks about the former owner of the plantation, Jason Morgan. He was very, very cruel. He was cruel to all the native workers. As he was as cruel as his wife was sweet and caring to them. And she began to take a great interest in their rituals and in their religion. And she actually would go and do the chanting and dancing with them on these occasions. And Jason Morgan didn't like that. He physically abused his wife several times. And on one particular occasion, while she was out performing the ritual with the natives, Jason Morgan was extremely drunk. He came after her and actually shot and killed her. And so that night, they performed their voodoo ritual to make his wife, whose name is Marie, become a living dead, a zombie. And she walked into the house. Jason Morgan was shocked. He grabbed his pistol and started shooting. But of course, you can't kill what's already dead. So he ran off into the jungle with her slowly chasing behind until he misstepped and fell in quicksand and died that way. And the white zombie walked up to the edge and blindly followed as well. And that's the story. And so the reporter says, well, they did bring her back because I saw her. And he's like, her, I'm done. As he's telling that they were talking about the story, he was developing his pictures. So he says, you know, it's developed. Let's take a look. And shows the picture of all the natives dancing, shows the pole and the fire, and where the white zombie was, there's absolutely nothing at all. It doesn't show up in the photograph. And that's the end of that story. I mean, it's, you know, in EC Tales from the Crypt, great, great 50 stories. I absolutely loved it. Chris, I was telling Mike that I have the EC Archives that Dark Horse was reprinting. So I have this. This is volume one, and I've got volume two. So just, a lot of fun reading these.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
Do you you don't have them all then?
No, I see I can get volume three at a pretty good discount, like in stock trades or whatever, but I guess they had a volume four, but it's not in print anymore, so I'd have to
Yeah,
kind of.
the higher you go up, the harder their lower print runs, so
Yeah,
it'll probably be
so
harder to get.
I'm hoping they either reprint it, because I bought this
But you
volume one.
probably could get it through what is it, Gemstone? They still publish it. The
Okay, yeah, I have to take a look.
if you look in the previous catalog, sometimes they'll have their versions of the Dark
That's where I
Horse.
actually got this one, this volume
Yeah.
one. So I was hoping maybe they were starting to reprint them, but I haven't seen any more. I had to go on eBay for volume two for about $10 more than what the original price was.
Yeah.
But being that it's totally out of print, I didn't think that was terrible. And like I said, volume three is still available. So kind of hoping they were going to go back and do some more printings of these, but so far nothing but volume one.
Yep.
So yeah, it was cool. It was a lot of fun.
All right, so my next pick is I'm still in the blood.
Oh
So
yeah.
I'm still in the Image too. A lot of Image blood comics. But this is Blood Legacy from Top Cow. And this was an interesting one, and I don't know if Kerry Hawkins, I don't know what I don't know if Kerry Hawkins is the wife of Matt Hawkins or a sister or brother. I don't know. Kerry spelled with an I, so I usually think that is a woman's name. But
Which one is this? It's a, I've got a couple here,
the
the young
story of
one and the short
Ryan.
one. Gotcha.
Yeah. I guess yeah, it's only 4 issues long. And the artist changed. You got Andy Park, Eric Basaldúa, and Mark Perillo, and they're all similar. Like Andy Park is probably the one that's the most different. But Top Cow definitely, like if you read Top Cow books, they have a style of artist. It's almost like Silvestri says you have to look like me or Dave Finch or something of that caliber, because everything is done like that. This Blood Legacy is kind of a slow burn, but in a soap opera, but it's really good. Like it looks, the covers look more adventurous than the content, but if you're patient and you read it, it's really, really good story. The story's about I don't know if you guys have seen Dragon Slayer, but
Oh, sure.
back then they used to hide girls to be boys in order to keep them from getting the lottery to sacrifice to the dragons. But this is sort of a similar tale where it was a girl and they raised her as a boy for whatever reason. And she ran across a vampire. Her name is Ryan Alexander, and she ran across a vampire in the 14th century named Victor. And then it got kind of weird because Victor, as a little girl, well, she was maybe, I don't know, maybe she was like 16 or 15 or whatever. He bit her and turned her. This is really like a vampire story, but a really slick way of doing vampires. Like you don't see fangs or anything. You see more immortality than anything, but they do bite each other. And there's this group called the Others, and they're like a group of vampires. And so you have this thing happen in the past, and then cut to the present time. There's this doctor, and she finds, her name is Dr. Susan Ryerson. She finds the carcass of this body. It just looks burned and cut and decimated. And the morgue calls her up and says, "Hey, you're doing a study on trying to find cures for regenerative abilities, and this body is very unique and weird. You might want to come check it out." So she starts experimenting on it. And she realizes, wow, this body, it looks like it's going to start breathing. And sure enough, that's Ryan's body in the future. And she regenerates herself once she starts giving blood to the what was the corpse. It starts to regenerate, and now she wants to figure out, like, she publishes a paper based on these regenerative abilities without telling the truth about how she found this body, and it became and it regenerated itself and left. And then Susan is sort of a bystander learning about Ryan and telling the story of Ryan. Like, she's documenting how she became a vampire, but she's not telling her the entire truth. And then it has a story of how Ryan killed Victor, who's the guy who turned her. And you don't think that you could kill a vampire like this, because they don't have weaknesses to crucifixes or stakes or whatever. But what she did is she ended up starving herself, like, just like to the point where she just needed to drain a body completely of blood. She drained the body of Victor and then, like, decapitated him and then cut him into pieces and then started to eat him. Like, she just absorbed his contents. And so later on in the fourth issue, she's on trial for the murder of Victor through by these others. There are a lot of vampires that are putting her on trial. And then it just turns out that she didn't kill Victor because Victor's behind the whole thing. It has, like, a really weird ending, and I imagine this gets continued in the other book that you mentioned, Blood Legacy, The Young Ones. Or
Yeah.
maybe it's not. That's from two th well, no, that's 2003. So this follows on that story. So yeah, maybe it's continued there. I did put that one in my cart so I could pick that issue up and see where it goes. But yeah, this is a lot of Top Cow books. I guess I, for whatever reason, I didn't buy, but I would like to get them all. I have a lot. I probably have the entire Witchblade, but I have, like, none of the Darkness. And there's a lot of other titles that are on the sides that I never really got. They seem really interesting. It's good stuff. I liked it. I
Yeah,
read
for
this
sure.
yesterday along with a book called Gunning for Ramirez. That was really cool. That was a direct-to-trade Image book, and that one reads like a Robert Rodriguez screenplay. It is insane. I'd highly recommend it if you like Robert Rodriguez films, like
You're the only person that I
El
know
Mariachi.
that could do a whole month of books that have blood in it and actually have enough material to go through.
Well, there's a lot. I there's a lot of blood titles.
Sure.
As
But I
I'm
don't
going
think I got the
as I'm
perfect
going
length
through
for the whole
this
thing.
experiment, I'm finding a handful of them that really look cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Chris?
Yes, sir.
You're up.
I'm good. I gotta get going, actually.
Okay. You want to do a lightning round, like 2 minutes?
Second.
You can do it.
Do it.
It's a
Yeah, I can mention.
challenge.
Let's see. I'll mention that I watched Mobile Suit Gundam F91. So I. A few years ago, I started watching like mecha anime from like starting with older stuff, including Gundam anime. And there was like three 50 episode series or so before this, and then like a movie and like a short series. And this came out in 91, and a lot of the stuff that came before it like was all interrelated, kind of one followed after the other and stuff. And then this movie takes place in the same universe, but about, like, I don't know, a few decades later. So it's related, but it was meant to be kind of like a new starting point, and the creator wanted to originally do a new series, but there were some kind of problems, like some kind of disagreements. I don't know, with the studio or some kind of something in the background, though, that caused some problems. And they ended up just making this movie. So there's some kind of staff disputes or something, but anyway, they originally, like, they had written screenplays for like 13 episodes and they condensed it all. So the kind of general consensus is that it's, it feels that way. Like it feels like something that was meant to be given a lot more time. It feels kind of rushed, and I did feel like kind of the same way about it. I still enjoyed it, but I did feel like that was the accurate kind of assessment. But the basic gist of it is that with the Gundam series, you always have like a young person who has sort of a natural ability to fly the operate the Gundam, like these giant robot, and there's always like a conflict of some sort. Like the first Gundam series is really heavily based on World War II, and in this there's like the Federation, which is Earth-based, and then there's this new group called Cosmo Babylonia, and they're trying to like establish like a new rule based on aristocracy and stuff. And the main, there's two kind of main characters. There's a man named Seabook Arno and his girlfriend Cecily Fairchild. And when it starts out, the two of them, Cecily, maybe is how you say it, Cecily, she doesn't realize that she's actually a descendant of the aristocracy that they're fighting with. She was just like raised as a favor on this colony. So she finds that out, and brief for a while, she goes back to live with her real family. So her and Seabook end up on basically like opposite sides of this conflict. Like I said, it was good, but it felt pretty rushed. It would have been interesting to see, like, it's too bad they didn't make it how they originally intended, because I think it would have been a really good series. You know, and they just made of it what they could, but I have enjoyed watching the Gundam stuff I've watched. I'm not like super into like the giant robots and stuff like that. It's more of like the space opera, like the drama of war creates such such crazy situations, you know, and like the seeing the characters in that situation of conflict is
what are you watching enjoy. It? How are you watching it?
This I ended up having to so some of the earlier series I found on streaming services and stuff, but like this movie I couldn't find anywhere, and like I saw there was a Blu-ray that was available of it, but I don't, it was a little too expensive for my taste. I ended up finding like a cheaper version of it on eBay on DVD. Okay. That like, you know, it was originally, it's out of print, but it wasn't expensive.
What made you want to do it to begin with, though? Because it wasn't easy to get. You had to look for it. Something had to drive you to want it.
Well, it was the next, like, it was the next released thing, you know, like I like to do things in chronological order all the time.
Okay, I see.
And so I had watched all the Gundam stuff that came out prior to this, and this was the next thing in line. I mean, if it had proved, like, really difficult or really expensive, I would have skipped it. But since I found the DVD on eBay for decent price, like, that's
good
why
deal.
I went with this one.
Worked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you're going to go get some lunch or dinner?
It's not, well, it's not that late yet. It's not
only 1 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Yeah. 1 o'clock.
Oh, 1 o'clock, yeah.
So what are you going to have for lunch, Chris?
I already had something. When I left for like 5 minutes, I went and made a hummus wrap.
Hummus.
So I didn't start getting super hangry on you guys.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
Rob, did you have anything
else? Yeah, but
else?
I don't have anything else. No.
Okay. All right. We can wrap this one up and call this one a complete. I hope you guys have
Indeed.
A good rest of your weekend, and you can reach us at Twitter at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, and at Rob Krieger. Sounds like Seeger, but you don't spell it like Seeger.
No, sir. Thank you. Thank you both. I had a wonderful time. It's a great way to start my Sunday morning.
Yeah, at Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, a little bit of a wait there, but that's okay.
All right. Well,
was there a lot of people in line, or were they just being slow?
There was a ton of people. I couldn't get into the parking lot. I was on the street waiting. I don't know exactly what the deal is. I think that they don't have enough. I think that the owner doesn't hire enough people or put enough staff on. But so I was probably there for a good almost 15 minutes just waiting.
Wow.
But what can you do?
Not much.
Go watch some more horror movies.
Yes.
I might watch one today.
It's
either that or read some comics. I'm going to finish reading that Cable. Going to find out what happened to how the guy was killed.
I'm going to go try to take care of some more leaves.
There you go.
Leaves.
He's making those pumpkin leaf baskets for Halloween.
Oh, nice
baskets.
Send me one.
Yeah.
Yeah. go wait by your mailbox.
Okay.
All right, you guys have a good one. Talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right.
Yep. Have a good
one. Take care.